Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, talk about a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest for this episode is Shannon Sunnerth. Shannon, thank you for joining me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.
So tell the fine folks out there in listener land, which I've never called it before, so it amused me, how they might know you.
They would probably know me best if they are in the podcasting world through the Audio Guide to Babylon 5. That is a project with my husband Chip and our good friend Erica Enzen that we started this year to go through episode by episode the television show Babylon 5. Before that, I would once in a while jump in on my husband's Doctor Who podcast, 2 Minute Time Lord.
Now, see, these are two big areas of fandom that we need to explore just a little bit, even though this is, you know, this is a podcast all about Star Trek. But I want to talk a little bit about Babylon 5, just because there is some overlap with Star Trek.
There is, somewhat.
And I've never seen any of Babylon 5. I feel like I should give up my geek card admitting that. But it came on at a point where I think Babylon 5 is different enough from Star Trek that when I first tried to watch it, it just made me angry for some reason. And I don't know why. Maybe it was Bruce Boxleitner or whatever. But tell me, what do you think the biggest difference is between Babylon 5 and Star Trek? I don't know if that's even a question you can answer, but...
Oh, yeah, actually, it's a very simple question to answer. The Star Trek franchise, the original series, Next Generation, those were pretty much designed to be episodic television. Yes, you had the same cast of characters, and sometimes you had these underlying threads of plots that they would revisit now and again, but you could still watch an episode of Star Trek and get the whole story and be done. Babylon 5, however, was its creator, J. Michael Straczynski, set it up to be essentially a novel for television. So he had in mind, as he wrote and as he began setting it up, a beginning, a middle, and an end. So when the 5 years were up, the story he wanted to tell was done, and especially in the middle, like season 2, 3, and 4, when the biggest part of the plot, overall plot, was happening, you really had to keep watching to understand what was going on. The first season started somewhat episodically as he was building the world, but pretty soon it was more soap opera-ish in a way in that structure. If you didn't know what was going on and you just got dropped in the middle, it would take quite a while to figure it out. The underlying structures are very different.
And that, I think, also is another thing that made it difficult for me to jump in. The story arc is powerful, I think, because it rewards loyal viewers and they get the whole story and you can tell a very elaborate and complex story. And that's something that Star Trek learned and applied for Deep Space Nine and Enterprise. But the downside, of course, is if I'm just plopped into the middle of season 3 of Babylon 5, I have no idea what's going on.
Exactly.
And I'm like, well, why should I watch this anymore? Because I don't know who any of these people are. I don't know what's happening. I'm in the middle of this story.
Exactly. Like I said, totally different structures between the two.
And Doctor Who, which is the other area of fandom, I think is very episodic, although they've added some kind of overarching arcs as well later on.
Yeah, I think it shows the difference between Old Who and New Who, that they took into account the audiences of the 21st century. We look for arcs now. We want more continuity in our stories. I think Babylon 5 may have helped kick that off. Certainly things like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and other properties, Lost, started working to build their audiences and then reward them with constant continuity checks. So you felt like you were in as you were watching it because you knew what was going on. And I think the new Doctor Who takes some of that into play.
Right, it makes you feel like you're part of the club. You know what's going on. You have this special knowledge. And also, it helps make the characters deeper and more interesting and the stories richer, which is
indeed
what we really want as a viewer. But enough of these other lesser fandoms. I say that in jest. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
These days, more of a casual fan. There was a period when Next Generation was on and I was in grad school and living with my sister, she started watching Next Generation when it began airing. And she sort of got me into it. And we enjoyed watching it together for a while. I was over the moon for Will Wheaton at the time when he left in season three. I didn't watch as religiously, but I still paid attention. And I paid attention to start watching Deep Space Nine. But after that, I hit a really busy a really busy time in my grad school career. So my TV watching sort of shrunk a bit. And then someone introduced my husband to Babylon 5, and he introduced me to Babylon 5, and things just sort of veered off in that direction after that. So I'm familiar with the characters, a lot of the story arcs, sort of pay attention to it. I did watch the new movie, the first new movie when it came out, but not a devotee the way I was during during some of the Next Generation years.
So would you say if you had to pick a series to be your favorite series, would it be TNG?
Yeah, definitely.
And so what about TNG other than Will Wheaton? Although if it's just Will Wheaton, that's fine too. Did you
No, it's not just Will Wheaton. I also was really fond of Brent Spiner playing Data. He's another favorite character. And in general, I enjoyed it was an easy show to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, again, that episodic nature of it. You could drop in and enjoy an episode, but if then you missed the next few, it was okay. And being a very busy student at the time, that fit my lifestyle.
You could just get a slice of Star Trek and not have to worry about the continuity. But this episode, which is that we watched, which is called Inheritance from Season 7, which is the last season, Episode 10...
Yep.
Kind of illustrates one of the drawbacks, I think, of the episodic nature of attempting these kinds of things, mostly within character development, because Brent Spiner and Data, Data is one of my favorite characters. Brent Spiner does a great job with it. But Data, over seven seasons, doesn't really change a whole lot. And he's always dealing with the same kind of I'm not a real boy kind of issue.
Yeah.
He doesn't – it doesn't progress that much. And this part of this episode deals with that as well, although this is a very interesting episode. There's lots I think we can talk about. But that is the kind of – I think one of the main drawbacks of not having this kind of overarching story. Your characters are kind of in stasis dealing with the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, bless his heart. You know, Will Wheaton I think was the only one who got any real massive growth just by – the fact that he was the youngest character and
he
obviously
was actually
aged.
Growing.
Yes.
And then he turned all powerful and
yeah.
He faded away.
Man.
So this is the episode that I, in my notes, I wrote down how Data met his mother.
Yes.
So spoiler alert, Data meets his mother in this episode. Although yes. There's another spoiler, which we will also spoil, but not immediately.
Okay.
Just, you know, we want people to – we want to lure them in to listening to the whole episode. although I assume they have I don't really know if people watch the episode that we're talking about before they listen to this podcast or listen to this podcast and then judge if they want to watch the episode. I'm not the person who dictates how people watch Star Trek.
Okay.
But so I have no idea if I would ruin it or not. I don't know if everyone knows this big secret, so we'll build up to it.
All right.
There's a big secret, though.
It's mystery.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, this starts off with the Enterprise is orbiting this planet called, what, Atria 4. Atria?
Yes.
Something like that.
Atria.
Atria. I can't pronounce anything. And apparently... the core of their planet is cooling and solidifying, which is a problem.
Yes.
And it's causing all kinds of wacky things to happen. So the Enterprise has arrived to save the day, and the government of this planet sends two people up to the Enterprise to deal with this. This seems like, and this is an odd thing I think about this episode, if your planet had its core cooling and solidifying, I think you'd have more than two people working on the problem.
I would think so as well, but it seems to be they sent the leaders up to confer with the Enterprise crew.
Who happened to be a married couple.
Yes.
Dr. Pran Tainer, I guess is how they say it. And he is one of the Atrians, or Atrians, which are, they are a race that has giant ears, much like the Ferengi, only slightly different. They don't act like the Ferengi at all, although we really only meet one, and he's not very important in this episode.
Right.
But more importantly is his wife, who is a human, who is Juliana Chainer. They come aboard, they have a chat with Picard and Data.
Cue the techno babble.
Exactly. They're talking about how they're going to, you know, drill a hole and do something with magma and plasma and everything's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
Geordi and Data, like, solve this problem instantly. They're like, okay, we know what we can do. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, oh, great. Then the meeting's over. Throughout the meeting, Juliana is staring at Data in a kind of a weird way. And you're not really sure why.
Mm-hmm.
And then she says, well, Data, the meeting's over. And she's like, hey, Data, do you recognize me? And he says, she says, do you know who I am? And he says, of course, you're Dr. Juliana Data. You're here from the planet. We just had this meeting. How could I not know who you are? And she said, no, you really don't have your early memories. Data, I'm your mother.
Yeah.
And then he's like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the setup, which is it's an exciting kind of setup, because you're like, who is this woman? She just appears. And, mm-hmm. and is she lying? Is this some kind of plot? It doesn't, like, it wouldn't make any sense for her to be lying, but we've never heard of Data having a mother. We know, you know, Noonien Sung is his creator, but there's never been mention of a woman involved at all, which is another interesting issue that I think we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So many interesting things happen in this episode, even though the plot itself is not all that interesting. The main plot.
Right.
So, as one would expect, upon hearing that your mother has just appeared and you have no memory of her, Data wants to get to the bottom of this, so they go to 10 forward and they have a little chat, and Data asks, you know, oh, I've never heard of you, so...
Yes, all the questions.
Exactly. Why have you never... He doesn't actually ask, why haven't you contacted me, but they do. As they were talking, I thought to myself, why hasn't she ever sent him like an email or something saying, hey, Data,
mm-hmm.
I'm your mama.
Yeah.
But she explains later in the episode. And so she talks about how Data had trouble with, you know, when they were first raising him, he had trouble with sensory input and, you know, so they wiped his memory, basically, and then reactivated him with some upgraded programming so he would work better, I guess.
I suppose.
I guess. It seems to have worked, though.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of mentions of programming for this and programming for that that just reemphasizes the whole concept of these androids. Sometimes has me just shaking my head.
It is true. It seems to have they have positronic meshes and programming and all kinds mm-hmm. of techno babble to explain various plot holes, basically. Mm-hmm. And so, oh no, as we all know, the colony that Data was created on, I suppose, was attacked by the crystalline entity. So shortly after they wiped his memory, they deactivated him, and then they fled from the crystalline entity, and there was only room for Juliana and Noonien, so they left Data behind, and they bugged out, as the mm-hmm. preppers say.
Yes.
And then so Data was like, well, why did you leave me behind? And, you know, she says, well, we only had two seats, so that's all right. And then he's like, well, you know, I've actually met Noonien Sung. And he didn't mention you at all. And she's like, oh, well, we broke up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had a bad breakup, so I'm not surprised.
Right.
And then there comes a moment where... So, you know, this whole up until this point, it's humanizing Data, right? Because his mom is there and it's seemingly struggling with this revelation. And then he just kind of offhandedly says, well, you know, he's dead. So Noonien Sung is dead, which mm-hmm. is something I would think most people who have a little tact wouldn't just casually drop and say, you know, well, he's dead after all.
Not in his programming.
Exactly. He doesn't have a tact subroutine, apparently. And so she's sad. Juliana's sad. But they move on from that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of sadness and then quickly moving on from sadness.
Yes.
It all comes down to Data doesn't really know what to make of this. Right? He thinks... Well, he doesn't... I guess it's hard to say because Data doesn't have emotions, right? So can he trust someone or can he not trust someone? Is trust an emotion? I don't even know.
He does what he would do, and he goes to verify the facts.
Exactly.
That is something he can do.
That is something that he goes to engineering for some reason to verify the facts.
I think he's multitasking. He and Geordi are working on the problem with the planet, and at the same time he's got a screen up and doing his investigation.
He's Googling.
Yes.
It did make me think there was another point at which I was like, oh, well, they went off. So she says, oh, we eloped because my mother didn't approve of Noonien
right.
Sung. And that's why you didn't know we were married. And Data's like, oh, all right. And it made me think, well, shouldn't there be like some kind of central Federation marriage registry that Data could quickly look it up? But they answer that question by saying that they went to this secret planet, which I guess is like the Las Vegas of the Federation. One assumes Space Elvis married them. But apparently then there was a government upheaval and all the records were destroyed. So Data could not verify that they were actually married. But he did, being Data, cross-reference all passenger manifests to see if they actually were on that planet. And they were at the time for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And Geordi's like, well, there you go. It happened. Data's like, well, just because they were on the planet doesn't mean they're married.
Right.
And then Geordi and Data have this lovely conversation where Geordi's like, it really seems to me like you're looking for a reason not to trust her. And you have to learn how to trust Data. That's part of being human. and Data is like, I'm not human, but okay, I'll try.
Right.
And so Geordi says, oh, remember when you had that emotion chip? Maybe it had hidden files in there. Maybe there's some hidden files somewhere that will explain all of this. But we don't know where they are.
Nope.
So that seems very unsatisfying. But,
yes.
Data seems to accept it, but he's still a little confused. Data is worried that he can't remember his past, but he's like, okay, I'm going to try and accept the fact that this woman is my mother. And I think I'd like to say the woman who plays Juliana Tayner, whose name I do not know because I
looked it up. It's Fionnuala, I believe is how you pronounce it, Flanagan.
Yes, she does a wonderful job, I think.
I agree. Yeah, her performance overall, I really enjoyed it.
And she looks like a person who would be married to Noonien Sung. I know that sounds ridiculous, but she has a very motherly look about her too. So you're just kind of like, yes, this is someone I can trust and very maternal.
Yeah.
And Data, what's wrong with Data? He should just accept her. He's lost his father and now his mom is here and he's pushing her away. Dagnabbit. And then there's this nice little scene where we talk about Juliana and Data are talking, and she said, you know, I wanted you to be a girl.
Right.
And Data's like, what?
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, but, you know, Noonien solved the problem by coming into the room with your head in his image. And so he's, you know, you're a boy because of that. which is one way to win an argument.
Yeah, there's several moments like that while they fit in the story, they were just a little bit at times, a little bit saccharine. Her talking about the need for a modesty program because he wouldn't wear clothes.
Yes.
And her assuming that he's going to see Deanna Troi for a date. And even
yes.
though, you know, on the one hand, I can see the writers deliberately setting up these moments of child against mother, growing child against mother for the comedic effect. But a couple of them felt a little over the top.
Yeah, she went immediately from, hey, I'm your mother to, no, really, I'm your mother and I'm going to embarrass you even though you cannot experience embarrassment.
I'm going to try
for no particular reason. And then it did make me wonder, so they talk about how he's anatomically correct, which we knew. It made me think, well, why is he anatomically correct? It doesn't seem to make much sense. That could be a larger question, but and he has a sexuality subroutine,
right?
which I guess the point is that Noonien Sung wanted to make something as close as to human as possible.
That seemed to be his goal, yeah.
So he's, as Data has said before, he is fully functional.
Indeed.
So there you go. Just something I was pondering since they brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
They have that awkward scene where he's going to talk to Deanna Troi, and she thinks, oh, well, good luck with that. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more. and then they have this nice little scene where she goes, she's like, Data, I want to see your quarters because I want to see where my son lives.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, go to my quarters. They go to his quarters. He plays his violin for her.
Mm-hmm.
She just so happens to know the piece that he is going to be performing. He's going to be performing one of his recitals at 10 Forward, mm-hmm. and she knows the piece. So she's like, Data, would you mind if I performed with you? And Data's like, sure, why not? And she says, you wouldn't happen to have a viola laying around.
That's what replicators were.
Well, exactly. I found that – I mean, this is – the whole point of this podcast is I have many nitpicks about things.
Right.
And in this future – replicators are very prevalent. Why would she even – she would just replicate one. She wouldn't say, do you have one laying around?
Mm-hmm.
A very minor point, I know, but such right. is my life, pointing out these minor things that don't make much sense. Mm-hmm. Although I did like the fact that he just kind of went off screen to replicate it. They didn't want to spend the money on the special effects. So
right.
we heard the sound effect and then viola. A viola.
Yes. Here we are.
And then they practice and everybody's happy. But they'll, oh, this is, I don't want to skip over this part. And then in the corner, there are a bunch of paintings
mm-hmm.
that Data has been, he's attempting to master every style of painting known to humankind, I guess.
Yes.
Because he doesn't seem to paint anything that isn't of human origin.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems odd to me also because couldn't he just he's an android, could he just like download a subroutine and then he would just know how to do it? But anyway, be that as it may.
Well, he's exploring the process of creativity. He is trying to do it as a human would.
Well, there you go. See, that's a good explanation.
Yeah.
Cheating. He doesn't want to cheat by downloading a subroutine.
Exactly. And we get another one of those moments where, you know, oh, I argued I wanted you to have a creativity program. Yes. So...
And that's that brings up a point of – so Noonien Sung in Star Trek lore, obviously, is the creator of Data and everyone thinks he's a genius. And in this episode, we find out that his wife, who no one knew about, had a mm-hmm. huge part in making Data who Data is. And she gets no credit.
Yep.
So even in the future, women in technology are shafted.
Yep.
So good luck, ladies. Mm-hmm. That's my advice to you. So they're going through these paintings, and she's like, oh, look at this painting. And then they come across a painting of Lal,
mm-hmm.
who is, for those who have not seen the episode, Data in a – I don't even know what the name of the episode was.
It's The Offspring.
Oh, there you go. He creates – he gets it in his mind that he wants to have a daughter, so he builds one. And Lal is the daughter that he builds. And as we find out through many episodes of Star Trek, creating a positronic brain is very difficult. And actually, they mention it several times in this very episode because Data finds out that he thought he only had one brother, Lore, who is evil. Mm-hmm. But apparently there have been several versions before he and Lore were built that basically died.
Exactly.
And that's what happened to Lal. And it was very sad. And there's this little moment where, you know, Data's like, well, I guess I was her father. So I guess that means you're her grandmother. And then she's very sad for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And Data's like, let's go practice.
Exactly.
Once again, is showing the whole, he has no emotions. He's not a human. He even try as he might, he will never be a human. Or mm-hmm. will he? Oh, there's a big twist at the end of this episode. Well, not really at the end, but it's coming up, this twist, which has many repercussions. So many scenes of, you know, trying to show that Data is not like other boys, and he's having a hard time with his mother showing up. And then we find out that there was something that she's keeping, Juliana is keeping away from Data. And, you know, Data's suspicions are mm-hmm. warranted because she's been hiding this fact from him. Basically, lore. They created lore, right? And hooray, big achievement. Sadly, lore, super evil.
Oh, yeah.
Which is not, I guess they forgot to put in the good subroutine.
They hadn't developed the ethics program yet.
That's right. And so he's a bad dude. And so they had to deactivate him. And Noonien wanted to, you know, he was like, I can perfect it. I can do it again. And Giuliani was like, no, it was a big mistake. We shouldn't do it. But Noonien did it anyway. And mm-hmm. Data came along. And basically, she was afraid that Data, despite their best efforts, was going to be evil like his brother. Mm-hmm. And so when the crystalline entity attacked the colony, they all had to run off into an escape pod. Mm-hmm. She decided not to bring Data because there was room for Data, but she didn't want to bring Data because she was afraid that mm-hmm. he would be evil when he was reactivated. And so off they went. And then there's this nice scene where Data says, and she says, well, I didn't want to tell you because I didn't want to hurt your feelings. And I figured you might take it the wrong way because, and Data was like, well, you know, I have to remind you once again, I don't have feelings, so don't worry about mm-hmm. that. But I don't understand why you did it. And she says, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, let me ask you a question, which I think is a very valid question. And he said, if I were your biological child, would you have mm-hmm. left me on the planet?
Yep.
And, you know, that's a tough question. And she says, well, no, I wouldn't have.
Yeah. Yeah, it just brings back so many of these episodes that focus on Data, just are able to really sort of dig into all of the ethical issues of parenthood and raising, for example, terminally ill children or right. things like that. But because it's on this level of Data's an artificial life form, he's not a real person. That they don't have to dig in and answer them all the way through. They can just create these uncomfortable moments
right.
and make people think.
Quickly change the subject.
Mm-hmm.
Which they do, because she's like, no, I would have brought you if you were a real boy, but, you know, you're a piece of equipment. You were deactivated. She doesn't say that, but that mm-hmm. is the implication. So we left you there. And we didn't even know if you were going to be good or evil. So, you know, not that, I mean, and here's another point, right? No parent can tell how their child is going to grow up, whether through their best efforts, you know, the serial killers have parents too. So,
yep.
And their parents could be very lovely people. You just never know. These are the things you have to think about, people, when you're building androids or reproducing.
Exactly.
So words of wisdom from me for free to all of you. And so, this episode spends a whole lot of time in this whole mother Data relationship. Mm-hmm. But don't forget that there is this whole plot where this planet is in peril, and they're basically phasing a hole into the center of the planet to restart the molten core.
Mm-hmm.
And also, don't forget, Giuliana has a husband who doesn't really come up much, but he is there.
Yes.
So they beam down to the planet to set up some equipment or something. I don't know. And Giuliana's husband is there, Data's there, and Giuliana's there. And she says, you know, Giuliana told me what happened last night, Data. And I just want you to know she didn't mean to hurt your feelings. And then this is another scene where we're like, yes, we get it. Data doesn't have feelings. But they just really have to tell us.
Yes.
It is a little extreme.
I think they're driving the point home to what's going to be revealed in a little while, just how to set up the contrast.
And there's a strange scene in this part. It's very hot underground there. They're working mm-hmm. on this thing. And they have this weird lingering shot where Data's on one side of this machinery and his mother is on the other side of the machinery. And she's sweating and blinking and Data's staring at her, looking at her oddly. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a lingering shot that doesn't really make much sense. Until you find out what happens next. Well, not next, but soon. Mm-hmm. I will explain what happens soon. Although many of you probably already know. So this is an exercise of futility. As is everything in life, really. All right, so they back on the Enterprise. The recital goes off well, but once again, Data gives his mother a weird look. We don't know why. And then here's a very interesting scene where Data then rushes off to talk to Dr. Crusher And he says, "Hey, Dr. Crusher, I'd like you to give me access to Juliana's medical records." And I thought to myself, wait a second. There's no HIPAA in space. You can't just request someone's medical records for no apparent reason. And Dr. Crusher puts up a little bit of a fight. She's like, "Well, why do you want to know?" Mm-hmm. And Data says, "Well, I don't want to tell you." And she says, "All right." And gives him her medical records, which seem on the surface to be fine, because, you know, she has a slight problem with her heart, but that's it.
Right.
And so Dr. Crusher's like, "Well, tell me what really is here." And he says, "Well, I don't think she is who she seems to be. But if her medical records check out, I guess it's all right." So there you go. He's looking, but he can't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
But uh-oh, back on the planet, their shaft that they've been drilling, even though they're not really drilling it, they just phased it, is become unstable. So they have to rush down. And Dr. Pran, who is Juliana's husband, is injured in like a cave-in. So he has to stay up in the Enterprise. And then Juliana and Data beam down to figure out how they can stop whatever's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So they beam down. There's lots of things falling. They fix something very quickly. Then they run back to where they have to beam back up from, because they're so far underground that they need pattern enhancers to beam up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big cave in. And so now where there once was like a bridge or a path, there's a big cliff. And they can't get to where they need to go. And so Data says, "Well, we're going to just have to jump."
Yeah.
To which Juliana says, "I will not survive that jump." And she is correct, because that was a really big jump.
Yeah.
And Data is like, "No, you'll be fine." And I thought to myself, what? If a human did that, they would be dead.
Yeah.
Which is the big reveal. Because so exactly. Data jumps down. He's fine. He pulls Juliana with her, with him. Mm-hmm. She falls, but her arm falls off, and she's an android.
Yep.
That is the big shocking, which when I first saw this episode, it was quite shocking to me.
Yeah, I think it was too the first time I saw it.
About 10 minutes in, as I was rewatching this, I remembered, oh, right, she's an android. So it was less shocking, but
yeah,
it's a big thing. So she's apparently secretly been an android.
For decades.
For decades. Who knew? So they beam back up to the Enterprise. Data is as shocked as Data can be, I suppose. They beam to...
I don't know. I mean, he was expecting...
That's true. He does point out, who does he tell? Geordi, maybe, or someone that he suspected for two things. Well, three things. She
Riker,
was able
actually.
To...
I think he was talking to Riker.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. She was able to perform calculations very quickly. And Riker was like, well, maybe she's just good at math. Oh, Riker. She blinked using the same mathematical algorithm that Data uses when he's blinking.
To randomize them, yes.
Exactly, which I thought was very clever. And when the recital, they practiced before the recital and they got it perfect because, you know, Data cannot do things incorrectly after he's learned them.
Right.
And then when they played it back at the recital, she played exactly the same way she did during their rehearsal, much like Data did. So Data was like, aha, she's an android. Yep. And now having seen her arm fall off, he knows for sure.
Yes.
They can't figure out, though, the big thing is, why is she unconscious? Because her arm fell off, sure, but she should be fine. There's no damage to her positronic brain. And this is when they find a little chip in her head that has a holographic interface. And Data goes to the holodeck, and it's Noonien Sung, and basically he says, let me tell you the whole story.
Yes.
And this is where we find out that, sadly, Juliana, the original Juliana, the real, as they say, and this is what I wanted to talk to you, I think this is the real crux of the whole episode. So Noonien says the real Juliana Taylor is dead, and he managed to, you know, scan her brain and put her in this android.
Yes, his ever exponential advances just keep advancing, because now she can pass for human. She's got tears and sweat and all of these things that have Dr. Crusher with her mouth hanging open.
And emotions.
Yes.
Data has none of these things. But then he says it twice, that the real Juliana trainer. as opposed to this android that he created that ages, and that he has programmed to die at a certain undisclosed time, or deactivate itself. I guess it wouldn't die.
Right.
And he's also programmed it to, if it finds out that it doesn't know. So she doesn't know this is a.
Right.
She doesn't know she's an android.
Yeah.
And if she finds out that she's an android, she will deactivate herself, which seems kind of mean.
Yeah.
And I didn't quite understand why he would do that. But I guess he doesn't want her to live with the knowledge that she's not who she really thinks she is.
I do not know if he just thinks that having to put together this notion that she's been an android all of this time would just make the positonic brain just explode or something. I don't know.
It seems very strange. But there are many ethical problems here.
Yeah.
Chief among them, you know, the big quandary is Data. Now it's up to Data, right? He knows that she's an android. And Noonien says, well, she's not the real Juliana. But for all intents and purposes, she is Juliana because he's transferred her memories and her consciousness.
Right.
And this gets – I mean, they don't spend much time talking about it, but it's a big question of is this android actually the person, or is this something else, or is this just like a photocopy of the person? And this is just like, you know, a thing and it isn't sentient, but clearly it is sentient. So what is she?
Yeah. And they don't answer it. That's the one problem with the limited time that they give it. There's so many questions that it opens up that it doesn't really answer. They just, you know, say, okay, they don't tell her. They reactivate her, fix her, put a bow on it, and send her back down to live out the rest of her life. And one of the things that I had to wonder is, okay, what happens if she dies before her husband, the guy who was grousing about a machine saving his planet, like 20 minutes ago in the episode?
I skipped over him because he's kind of a dud, but he doesn't trust Data's calculations. There's a lot of subtle things they put in here. And now he's been married to an android forever, and he doesn't even know. And they don't – so that's the other question. So there's the ethical dilemma of do you tell her or not? And Data talks to Troy and Picard and Crusher to get some input because it's really Data's decision, right? It's his mother, his android mama, his choice.
Yeah.
Although really it should be her choice, but she can't really make that choice. So anyway.
Right.
And they have differing opinions. And like you said, he decides not to tell her. But then shouldn't they tell – her husband? I don't know. I don't know. It's a weird situation to be in. Like, speaking
very,
for myself,
very much so.
If my wife were an android, I'd like to know.
Yeah.
Also, I would like to be an android. So if they could transfer my consciousness into an android body, I'd be up for that as well. But that's a different conversation.
So, but yeah, her own autonomy, it's like, you know, there's no way to give her the choice to let her make the decision. There's Soong telling Data, don't tell her.
Right.
There's, you know,
and he stacked the deck, right? Because he's programmed her. If she finds out, she dies, basically. So Data has the choice of, okay, I tell my mom the truth and kill her, or lie to her and let her live her life.
Yeah, and there's not enough time in the episode, in the story structure, to, you know, consider that another option is whether or not, you know, tell her yes, but, you know, if Data has the skills to repair any damage or reactivate her afterwards, you know, there's no time to even think about these extra things. It's either I tell her or I don't, and he winds up doing the path of least resistance, I guess.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to hurt her. Although they have a nice thing where Data's very tempted to tell her just because he's for so long, he's been the only android in the universe, and he has no one that he can talk about his struggles with that really understands. And here along comes a more advanced Soong-type android, who is his mother.
Yes.
And this would be like the perfect person for him to have as a confidant and to talk about being an android together. Although she doesn't know she's an android, and if she finds out, she dies.
Right.
So really, this whole episode is just pooping on Data.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. And then he lies to her and says she's not an android. he lies to her again and says, oh, by the way, I was talking to Noonien Sung, and I just remembered that he told me once that he only had one true love, and that true love was you.
Yes.
Which he didn't actually tell her, him. But you could infer it. He kind of maybe said it.
Yeah, from the holodeck. Yeah, he adapts the holodeck conversation.
Right, to make her feel better, because she was, Juliana was pining, basically. Well, not really, I wouldn't say pining, but kind of wistfully thinking about what could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And if she made a mistake or not. And I don't think she did make a mistake, since, you know, he built an android that would destroy itself if it knew it was an android. That seems kind of like a big, a major ethics violation. I don't know. I'm no ethics professor.
Yeah,
that
it's
seems
neither
a little...
am I, but yeah, it's incredibly tangled.
Yes, it's very complicated. And the episode brings up all these great questions and really cops out and doesn't answer any of them.
Yeah.
It shows Data grappling with them a little bit, but then, as you said, he takes the path.
Oops. It's like, got to wrap up the episode.
Yep, see you later, Mom.
Yeah.
Enjoy your life. Oh, and Dad always loved you.
Yeah.
And that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, I think, Rene Echevarria was one of the co-writers of this episode. He also did Offspring, the episode with Lal. So, yeah, he seems to, whether he did it, whether he chose to or was given the opportunity, but yeah, he craps on Data a lot.
Why does he hate Data? Well, I guess Data is one of these characters who has so many interesting facets to his existence.
Mm-hmm.
That it makes it interesting to write. I would imagine it makes it interesting to write for him and to kind of put him in these situations and see what he does.
Yeah.
And then because, you know, obviously he's a man outside of humanity. And so he can serve as kind of an observer and bring up things that people can't who are humans. Right. He can say things about humanity that humans can't say. And act as an outside kind of judge, if you will. So that makes it interesting. So overall, what did you think of this episode?
I liked the sort of mystery aspect of it, especially seeing it again after a while, picking up the clues that Data would be picking up to point to the fact that Juliana turned out to be an android. But again, I found it intensely frustrating between the issues of do I tell her, do I not tell her, and taking the easy way out for that, that it kind of frustrated me. It also frustrated me that, you know, Noonien Sung keeps coming up with these deus ex machinae. Here's another android. Oh, here's another android. Here's a better android. Here's one that's so perfect, and I'm never going to let anybody know about it at all because I'm going to make her think she's human and just release her back into the world. You know, things like that. Again, the episodic nature of Star Trek doesn't give you time to explore the ramifications for these things, which I would really like to see happen.
And I thought, I like this episode. I don't think it's a great episode. It's kind of in the upper middle of the pack, I think, for Star Trek. But I think it could have been a great episode, but I feel like they focused too much of the time of the episode reinforcing once again, yes, Data doesn't have emotions and all that stuff, and then kind of building up this mother awkward humor kind of thing when they could have been spending, they could have cut out a lot of that stuff and spent a whole lot more time on the more interesting quandaries that Data has to face at the last, you know, like 20 minutes of the episode.
It is very front heavy. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it was just a missed opportunity. It could have been better.
I agree.
Shannon, thank you for joining me.
You are quite welcome.
I end all my podcasts very abruptly, much like this episode. Next on Random Trek, The Next Generation's Evolution.